Next up, the Old Moles' Jan Hocken is on the line with Amelia Bono to discuss her work on the film and project Shout Your Abortion. Jan.
Amelia Bono, welcome to KABU.
Hi, Jan. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, Clayton Morgridge, our host, talked about your film, but that hopefully will be down the road. For now, it's a book, and a fabulous book indeed, that follows on the viral hashtag Shout Your Abortion that took off in 2015 and became a mantra of the reproductive rights movement and part of a larger campaign to normalize abortion. First, tell us about that phrase and what captured the imagination, the aspirations of feminists that led to the viral success of it beginning in 2015.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that my co-founder, Lindy West, who's an incredible feminist author, I feel like she spoke to that answer most succinctly a while back when she said, shouting is simply the opposite of a whisper. And we've long been taught that our abortions are not to be discussed. You know, that they're sort of shameful secrets that we carry with us. We maybe whisper about them to our closest friends or relatives, but for the most part, personal abortion stories have not been a part of public discourse about abortion rights. And I think that that's a huge reason why the policy that we're seeing enacted today doesn't actually reflect people's real needs or values or lives, because our personal stories are missing. So in 2015, I had had an abortion in 2014, and it may shock some listeners to hear me say this, but it was a really empowering and positive experience. I, of course, would have preferred to have not become pregnant, but when I found myself pregnant, I knew that I was going to be able to take care of it. I knew that the folks at Planned Parenthood were going to take incredible care of me, as they always had, and that there was a clinic just a few blocks away where I could afford an abortion, where I would receive really high quality care, where I wouldn't experience any barriers to my access. And I truly just didn't feel convoluted or bad about having to do this. I just felt really lucky and really grateful that I was in a position where it was being made easy and shameless for me. Because also, I live in Seattle, Washington, which, you know, is like one of the most liberal and secular parts of the country. And so really the folks in my life are pro-choice. And I just sort of knew that it wasn't going to have to be something that I carried with me like this horrible, shameful secret, and that I could, in fact, have as much support from the people around me as I wanted. So fast forward about a year later, it was when the video attacks were coming out against Planned Parenthood, framing the organization as, you know, a baby brain chop shop or whatever, just this ludicrous propaganda, which has been subsequently absolutely thrown out as the trash that it is. But it was incredibly damaging at this time, and it was the first time that Republicans had mounted this effort to defund Planned Parenthood. And so the day that Planned Parenthood was defunded by the House of Representatives, I wrote a status update on Facebook saying, you know what, I had an abortion about a year ago at Planned Parenthood, and I'm not sorry, I'm not ashamed, and I'm actually just really grateful to have had this experience and for the care that I received. And I'm telling you this today because I think that the anti-choice movement is relying on silence from pro-choice women who have had abortions. And I hit post, I sent a screenshot to my friend Lindy, who I mentioned earlier. Lindy put that screenshot on Twitter and added the hashtag #ShoutYourAbortion. And within a couple of days, the hashtag had been used about 250,000 times by people all over the world talking about their own abortion experiences.
So part of your project is not only shouting in response to the anti-abortion, anti-choice forces, but within the pro-choice movement, within the larger feminist movement, there's also been an element of, if not shame, a certain veiled protectiveness. Some of the protectiveness of abortion care comes out of assaults on it and violence, but it also, I think you're saying there's some internalized discomfort or anxiety, feeling that you're rejecting a central aspect of femininity around maternality if you choose not to carry a pregnancy, and that this perpetuates a certain dynamic that doesn't serve us well. It seems like you're tapping into that, not only the antis, but a dynamic within the women's movement, within feminism, within the pro-choice movement itself.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true. I think that Shout Your Abortion is really just the idea that we're allowed to talk about our own lives and our own abortions however we choose to talk about them. And in many ways, like, it's as much of a response to the anti-choice movement's efforts to terrorize us into silence as it is to the pro-choice movement's efforts to capitulate and create a sort of apologistic stance around abortion, and this idea that, like, if we don't really talk about it, we can just kind of sneak it in there. And, you know, of course, Safe, Legal, and Rare, which thankfully has, like, fallen by the wayside at this point, but, you know, I can't think of any less compelling way to argue for something than by essentially saying, yeah, we agree that this thing is kind of bad, but sometimes we need it, so we're sorry, but please let us have it.
So there is that seeking redemption through a compelling story. And can you speak to that issue now, or that dynamic, as these laws are passed that become increasingly horrifying and restrictive, falling heavily on poor and marginalized communities, and that the pro-choice movement is sometimes reviving the tragic stories of the past summoning support. How many incest survivors or rape survivors are now will be forced to carry pregnancies? How do you respond to that in terms of the call for redemptive accounts or stories to justify abortion?
You know, I think that it's a really deliberate tactic of the anti-choice movement to write bills like the ones that we're seeing in Alabama that are so extreme that they don't have exceptions for rape or incest. And then we're hearing these tales trotted out of 11-year-old rape victim forced to carry a child. And then the pro-choice movement is, like, responding by elevating those stories and showing them as if to say, like, this is so messed up, you guys. How can you possibly be doing this? But, you know, anyone who is denied an abortion, anyone who is forced to procreate, has lost their right to life and has been disenfranchised in the most total and abhorrent way possible. This is not a gradient where some abortion bans are really extreme and some are not. Like, being forcing people to bear children is as extreme as it gets. And I think that the anti-choice movement knows that if they put stuff out there that's just so horrific, that we will attempt to use those horrific stories as an appeal, which then sort of implicitly suggests that it's not that extreme to ban abortion at 20 weeks. So then their next legislative move will seem sort of tempered in comparison.
Yeah, let's meet somewhere in the middle kind of idea, across the aisle.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think part of what is so easily forgotten in movements is the history of past struggles and what was at stake. Before Roe v. Wade, in many places in the country, women could secure a therapeutic abortion by going before a panel of doctors in a hospital and saying, you know, if I carry this pregnancy, I'm forced to, I'll kill myself or my child, or I'll go crazy. And so the liberatory side of legalizing abortion was not having to get permission from the medical profession to say, this is something I've decided for whatever reason. And yet Roe v. Wade never fulfilled that promise, because it's still very much tied to whether you can find a provider to secure the services. And for many women in the country, it's out of reach. Other places, like in Seattle, it's not difficult. How do you, in this book, which, by the way, is a fabulous read and it's beautifully produced, some might see the topic as not lending itself to a high aesthetic, but it certainly is, like the website itself, it's a fulfilling read. It's interesting. It's funny, sad. I mean, you've gathered up a lot of threads of women's lives, as well as the abortion issue, through these stories. How do you think about in the production of this book, the role of storytelling and the diversity of stories and the class and race politic in the fight for reproductive justice, even as you create a unifying refusal to apologize?
So I think that that's a great question. So just to backtrack a little bit, so Shout Your Abortion took off as this viral hashtag in 2015, and pretty much immediately it was much more than that. It was like this grassroots movement where people all over the country started having events and making art and doing graffiti and making clothes and having abortion speak outs and just doing all of these small community things that were like actions geared towards forcing their community to figure out how to hold space for these stories. And so then I had been in graduate school at the time. I left school. I was able to secure a grant to make this thing into a full-fledged, fully legit organization. And we're now in our fourth year as a nonprofit, essentially. And so the book is really like the first super concrete attempt at a snapshot of what is a very vast and freeform and pluralistic movement, because we're not like telling people how to talk about abortion. We're just giving them tools that will help them do so and supporting them as they're undertaking these projects in whatever ways we can. But while knowing that like the way that people want to talk about abortion in the Bronx is very different than Montgomery, Alabama, than Seattle, and you can say that a million times over, even within just same city, a community in the same city. So the book was a bit like intimidating, because the idea of putting parameters around something that's so open felt sort of antithetical to the whole thing. But at the same time, we really wanted to create a resource that could travel far and that we could get into abortion clinics so that people would be seeing this material right before or right after they have an abortion of their own. And we've subsequently done that. It's in 250 abortion clinics in the waiting and recovery rooms and counting.
I can confirm that claim, because filming in abortion clinics in different parts of the country, including Portland and Seattle, we saw your materials. It's an interesting intervention at a point where many women are vulnerable to the shaming that is not an inevitable effect of the abortion, but the social context that produces the shaming.
Absolutely.
So that was quite an intervention.
Right, and that's how I see it too, is like a stigma intervention. I think a lot of people just truly have no idea that there is any alternative to silence and shame and self-hatred. And so just letting them know there are people out there, there is a global community that of people who love themselves, who are proud of who they are, who have had abortions, and who are living good lives. And you don't have to hate yourself for what you're doing today. To quickly go back to your other question, because I think it's really important about like the diversity of subjects in the book, that was the most important thing for us, was to include as many kinds of stories from different kinds of people from all over the country as possible in order to truly show just the vastness of this experience. Obviously, it would be incredibly like shallow and, you know, harmful if the book was just full of like young middle-class white women like me who had no problems accessing the procedure and felt totally fine about it. So we started with geographical diversity, because that's, I think, the biggest big piece that determines the nature of a person's experience, is their ability to access the service easily and the social context in which that's happening. So we sent a photographer to like 9 different states. Some were southern, some were coastal, some were in the Midwest, and we contacted subjects and found these stories and stuff. But the stories range, like there are 43 stories. Subjects range in age from 17 to 85. There are people of faith and sex workers and people all over the gender spectrum, people all over the race spectrum, people who are poor, people who are wealthy, people who are famous, people who, you know, there's just all sorts of different folks in there. And I think that in aggregate, it does begin to represent. Oh, and also there are people who have had multiple abortions, which is something that's still, I think,
highly stigmatized
within the pro-choice movement. There's a woman who's had 5 abortions. There's another who's had 4.
And you also gather up a range of feelings of sadness and loss, as well as joy and liberatory sentiments. Well, Amelia, in closing, can you just say a bit about how our listeners can find the book and also learn more about Shout Your Abortion, the organization, which is, I think, a wonderful part of a larger movement, more than ever, in need of our support and our participation. Yeah. So how can listeners find out more?
The book is for sale on our website and as well as many other places online, but the best place to start is our website, shoutyourabortion.com. It's a place where a person can add their own abortion story in text or video, and there are hundreds if not thousands of stories on the site, as well as all sorts of documentation of different projects that people have done all over the country, and it really gives you a good feel for what this movement is. You can follow us on social media at Shout Your Abortion, and those are the really easiest ways. You can also just Google Shout Your Abortion book, and it will probably be, you can buy it all sorts of places.
Okay,
that way.
You're not hard to find. So,
not hard to find.
This is Jan Hocken talking today with Amelia Bono, co-editor along with Emily Noak of Shout Your Abortion, now available as a fabulous book. It's a satisfying and engaging read, along with the website and your social media. Thanks so much for being with us today, Amelia.
Thank you, Jen.